All right. I'll run the board for you.
Welcome. Am I actually being broadcast
we're
at this juncture?
Yeah, we're
lovely. Welcome to Evgo Radio 4.1. We are broadcasting from the lovely Bow Store downtown, or the boutique, as I call it. And Rishi keeps asking.
Oh, please don't keep that.
I've kept it.
Like that was a joke for last week's podcast, but last week is over, Brian. It's over.
Last week will be with us forever. I am not hearing myself.
Well. That's a feature, not a bug. Anyway. Would you like to talk about anything, or are we just going to...
Well, I mean, I just finished up the offensive UFR, which was not good. I think that will not
come
as a
surprise. Were you expecting it to be? Did you think there would not be a dead dove in that bag?
Well, so the weird thing is, like, I got a run blocking grade of, like, 71%, which is, like, very good. Like, usually, like, I say, if you hit 66%, that's an acceptable good day, and you're going to have a decent day on the ground. Michigan exceeded that by some margin and still kind of got skunked. And so I went back and I looked at what I was charting, and I was like, oh, right, this again. And this again is that all of my RPS positives are for passing plays, and all of my RPS negatives are for running plays. Because Michigan got a fair number of easy yards on dink screens and the like. They had a wide open screen to Chris Evans. That was a +2 in RPS. And then because of the fact that they can't pass protect and they can't really go deep, the safeties get to tee off. And so you get a lot of unblocked guys in the running lanes, and those end up with RPS -1s. And then the other thing that I think kind of hurt is that Michigan went to kind of a hokish spread offense, and I invoke that word
that's a rough
carefully.
One.
But so there are a number of plays in this game where there's a mesh point, and Patterson is looking at something, and it appears to be nothing. So he's not really looking at his screen. He's not really looking at someone that might be checking him. He's not really optioning anybody. So Notre Dame's able to use that extra guy in the box that you have to break up plays and either force blocks to not get made or to actually make the tackle himself. And that was disappointing because, you know, we heard all about RPOs over the offseason. Like, you know, Shea's running a bunch of RPOs and Milton's running a bunch of RPOs, and we didn't see, I think, any legitimate RPOs.
Right. The only thing we saw was the bubble screen thing, which is not
an
RPO in your terminology.
Well, no, it's not an RPO in anyone's terminology. An RPO is a downfield throw. Now, they've been attaching bubble screens to that kind of zone read action for forever, but we haven't actually seen someone go through a post-snap read of that.
Right.
So when Michigan is throwing those screens out there, it's like, you know, Shea looks out there and he's like, all right, I think that's going to work. And he doesn't even go through the mesh point. So on none of the screens did Michigan actually go through a legitimate mesh point. So to me, that's not an RPO because you're not doing a post-snap read. And I didn't see any of those.
I was surprised we didn't see any of them. I've been talking about RPOs a whole bunch this offseason, and
Everybody has.
Yeah, but like my point all the time was it takes a lot of practice time to get it right. If you're not reading the mesh point correctly, you can get yourself in a lot of danger, especially with downfield throws.
I'm sure it does, but we're also talking about a quarterback in Shea Patterson who spent his last 2 years doing almost nothing except ripping RPO-type stuff in a very, very spread offense. So if there's anyone on the roster who is impacted by the fact that it's tough to wrap an RPO, it is the quarterback, and it is only the quarterback. Because the offensive line is just run blocking, You know, the running back is just doing a regular old mesh point, and the receiver is just running a route. Oh, so the only thing that prevents you from running an RPO is your quarterback, and Shea Patterson is RPO ready in his third year in college after running it for 2 years at Ole Miss. So,
absolutely. I agree with you. I'm not sure the coaches believed it or knew it. I don't know if they're seeing practice time as practice time or what, but that's the best explanation that I can come up with for why this thing that we even got them on record saying didn't really happen.
Yeah, it's disappointing, and you see, you know, zone read plays from the gun where everybody on the first level is getting blocked, so you're not really getting that extra guy. And, of course, if you run from under center, that's going to happen too because your quarterback is not absorbing a guy most of the time. Like, they'll run a waggle, and maybe that'll hold a defensive end. But the difference there is that you can apply more power to a certain point. So you can take that extra guy, and you can put him in a gap, and you can try to, you know, basically make that extra guy irrelevant. That's much tougher from a spread unless you can option someone off. And Michigan, except in like a couple of cases, didn't. Now, there was like one play where Michigan had that dash read where they block zone one way and then the running back goes the other way. Mm-hmm. And so you see what running backs do against the spread these days is they shuffle. And so the defensive end shuffled and then Higdon was bang outside of him and that was 8 free yards.
Right.
And that was not something that we really saw much of the rest of the day. We saw some basic run plays. We saw Michigan go under center and try power a little bit, and that worked once, and then Bushel Beatty had a couple issues with it. But, you know, I didn't see a real coherent plan where Michigan was suddenly going to show something and then get a bunch of yards because they had set someone up for something.
So, I mean, I was a little encouraged when I did the Runyon article just because I was glad to see the coaches at least saw that was a problem and they addressed it. It's discouraging to kind of go through the whole offensive game plan after seeing Notre Dame's offensive game plan when they had kind of similar problems, right? Their passing game struggles to pass protect, mostly because Michigan's defensive ends are good, not because their tackles are so bad. But it's the same thing. They had the same issue, and they dealt with it with kind of, you know, by hitting Michigan a lot of different ways that punish you for reacting correctly to the thing that you saw first.
Well, you know, I thought their game plan wasn't, I didn't think it was like mind-boggling or anything. I mean, they hit some deep throws where it's just like,
I thought Notre Dame was a good, solid game plan. It was what I expected of them, but it's functional because if you're Notre Dame and you're going up against Michigan's defense, what would you do?
Well, I'd wait for the defensive tackles to not get any push, I guess, and then run up in the pocket.
But you've been hearing Michael Dumfour hype, and that was another thing that I guess we could get to in the defense.
I mean, that's kind of the other big takeaway from this week is that Mike Dumfour, we've heard hype about him for 2 years, and I would, you know, if he just was a guy who was a redshirt sophomore that nobody had been talking about, and he came in this game and he didn't really perform, and be like, he's a redshirt sophomore, he's a 3-star, he'll probably develop, it'll be fine. But since we've had this, like, just torrent of hype for 2 solid years, it's really disappointing. And so,
and he was worse in UFR than we even were talking about on Sunday.
Was he?
He had a bunch of -3 moments.
He had two of those, and those are very, very bad. But I thought he was about what I expected because he made one like legitimate play. And the second was kind of handed to him because Notre Dame busted. But, yeah, their first touchdown was so easy because Michigan was slanting to an outside zone, and he just gets buried. And it's like, oh, man. And, like, the play before that, he gets just blown out of the hole by a double at least. There was another incident where he gets blown out of the hole by single blocking, and it's just like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that you're banking on, you know, when you project a season, is that the things that people say have some resemblance to reality. I may be a bitter man who just did a very long season preview and then had large parts of it blown to crap immediately. But
if you are, you're like every other Michigan fan who watched Mo Hurst, guy used to Mo Hurst. We're told we had Mike Hurst, but big. Didn't we believe it, but we knew that, like, We were confident that he was going to be all right.
This was not. If they had two Brian Monets out there, I think things would have seemed a lot better. Because Monet just holds up against people. He'll make a play every now and again, but he's just going to be there. And he's going to push the pocket a little bit. And we didn't see that from anyone except Monet, really. Like, Lawrence Marshall was just kind of there. You saw Aubrey Solomon get barely any playing time, which is very strange as well. I mean, he had an appendectomy in the offseason, so it's possible that, he's still not entirely recovered from that. And it's... But it's like, you expect these two guys to be starters, and one's a five-star who's going to be a true sophomore, and one's a redshirt junior who's getting a bunch of hype. And you're like, all right, these guys are probably going to be fairly decent. And then you get that game, and it's like, how far can we get from this game to how far can we get from what we saw in this game before, like, the Wisconsin game? Can these guys, like, get a lot better in that period of time and then go man-to-man with that offensive line that the Badgers have?
I'm not as afraid of Aubrey. I thought that putting Monet in there was the right play for that game. That you have...
But you got to rotate, right?
Notre Dame has a good guard and a good center. So that's the play, right?
I don't know about that.
I thought that was the way to take away the number one thing that they wanted to do. And once they had that point, I mean, that's why Monet was in there, I thought. That he took away the one place that Notre Dame really wanted to run. And everything else they could build around. I was surprised they didn't use Aubrey more in the three tech.
I thought that they played Monet just because he was the only guy that they could rely on not to get exploded. Which is a little bit different take than you have. It's unfortunate. It's alarming. I thought the cornerbacks also had kind of an off game. Like, there were a couple of Wimbush downfield hits where I don't think anybody challenges that at all. But, the performance before that where you get, a flag on Hill and it's like, yeah, he's got to do that because he's worried about getting beat for a touchdown. Like, I don't think we saw that all last year.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit, it's a little bit off-putting. A little bit worrying because we came into the season with a lot of assumptions, and again, those kind of got damaged. In this case, we have a season's worth of evidence that LaVert Hill is an NFL level corner. We have a season's worth of evidence that Watson and Long are good to very good corners. We have less data about the defensive line, so I feel like the cornerbacks are a lot less of a, this is going to be a problem the rest of the season. I think it was just, they had a couple of issues. They needed to fix those issues, and hopefully they will. But enough about last week. Let's take a break, and we will come back, and we have a special guest for you if we can get this all hooked up and working.
Big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Welcome back to MGO Radio from the Bow Store on Main Street. This is MGO Radio 4.1. Have we hooked the things up and got the jiggers all corrected?
I believe so. We have John?
Yep, we got me.
All right. Well, that's John Falk, everybody. Of course, the legendary equipment manager at Michigan. His new book, well, his extant book, 40 Years in the Big House, has a lovely number of stories in it, and a couple of them are about the U of M MGO Blue Club banner. Did I say that correctly?
The Go Blue banner.
All right. Well,
the Go Blue banner.
You are Seth. You are the history guy here, so I'll let you pilot this one.
Well, yeah, we were. Dr. Sapp and I did a. That's Steve Sappardanus did a article in this year's book on the history of the banner, and especially when it got stolen by Syracuse, and some of the holes in that story, where I didn't hear what happened with your part of it. How did you lose that thing?
Well, what happened was Friday night, I guess the people in charge of the banner got it out and set it in the tunnel there in Chrysler Arena where they always put it. And we were up at the stadium Saturday morning, and the next thing you know, a couple people came over and said, "Hey, John, they've stolen the banner." And I said, "Oh, what do you mean they've stolen the banner?" He said, "Well, the MGO Blue banner's gone." And they were running around in a tizzy. And I went in and I said, "Hey, Lloyd, just so you know that we're probably not going to have the banner today." He says, "Why?" I said, "Well, it's missing." He said, "How could the missing banner?" And I said, "I don't know, but I said, it's not here right now. So might as well plan on not having a banner out there when the team takes the field." And I have a – my recollection was that – when the players took the field, they were jumping up in the air like the banner was there. But they were really confused. They couldn't understand what was going on. And, of course, we played Syracuse that day, and we were pretty confused for the whole first half. Yeah, Donovan McNabb, he kind of confused us for the whole first half. And they probably played one of the most perfect halves of football that I think I've ever seen a team play against Michigan. And of course, I'm going to contribute to the fact that the players didn't have that MGO Blue banner there, but it probably would have happened anyway. But we really missed that banner. So the next week they had to make a substitute banner, which wasn't the same. It was made out of a flimsier material. And then they finally, after it took a couple weeks to get the new banner to look just like the old one, and then they brought it in. But I didn't know the history of the banner until one day Al Renfrew, who was our ticket manager and, of course, our former hockey coach, he was in a Mercy nursing home there recovering from a heart attack. So I went over, and as I was driving past the home, the rehabilitation center, I said, "Well, I should stop in and see Rennie." I said, "No, you know what? I'm going to go on to work, and I'll see Rennie later." Well, for some reason, my car automatically turned around and headed toward that rehabilitation center. I got out, I went in, and there was Rennie and his daughter Judy, and we were talking, and we were talking about reminiscing about old times, and all of a sudden, Rennie says, "Now, you know, John, you know how the banner started, don't you?" And I said, "No, tell me, Rennie." So he and Judy proceeded to tell me that Marge, his wife, in 1962 asked Bump Elliott if he could do something before the game to get the players excited.
This is the Illinois game in 62, right?
Pardon me?
This is right before the Illinois game in 62.
Yeah, yep. So what they did was she went out and she sewed 10 M flags for each side of the 40-yard line. And from what I understand, the way Judy and Rennie explained it to me, former football players were waving that flag as the team ran across the field going to our team bench. And they were all saying, "Go blue, go blue, go blue." And all of a sudden, all the other members of people who had won M's at Michigan said, "Wait a minute. We want the Michigan football team to know that everyone who's an athlete at Michigan, anybody who ever earned a letter at Michigan, is rooting for the Michigan football team." So they went out, and the M Club got the banner. M Club supports you. Go Blue.
And the M Club is every letterman at Michigan.
Every letterman at Michigan. Every letterman, every former letterman, and anybody who played athletics at Michigan and got a letter would stand out there and hold that banner while the Michigan football team came by and tapped the banner. I know that when I got here in 1974, that was a tremendous feeling to run out on that field and to see that M Go Blue, the M Club supports you, and you tap that banner. Now, when I was younger, I would used to get up and I would touch that thing. But as the years went on, about the last 5 years, I had to just take my hat and tap it with my hat because I couldn't jump up there anymore to touch the banner. And then now when I go out in the field, now I walk across the field, and 9 chances out of 10, the banner's already taken down by the time I get there. But little did I know that talking to Al Renfrew about the history of that banner, once I got that story, I said, "You know what? I'm going to put this in my next book," which is the 40 Years in a Big House book. I walked out of that rehabilitation center. I got over to the football building, and I was there for like 15 minutes, and somebody said, "Hey, John, did you see Al Renfrew today?" And I said, "Yeah, I stopped by to talk to him." He said, "Well, you were probably the last person to talk to him because Al passed away a few minutes ago." And just by chance, I was able to get that story. And it's a tremendous thing in the history of Michigan football. And that banner means an awful lot. And I know that when it was gone at the Syracuse game, it meant a lot. And to those players, it means a lot. And I'll tell you a funny story about the banner. We were back in 1973, if you remember. I wasn't here, but I've seen video of it. When Woody
came out.
I don't
remember 73. I'm sorry. I was born in 79.
Yeah, in 1973, the Ohio State football team came out of the tunnel, and they all went over and dismantled that banner and took it down from the M Club members.
An infamous moment.
Pardon me?
An infamous moment.
Yes, an infamous moment, yeah. And Bob Buford said, "How dare they? They have the unmitigated gall to tear down Michigan's M flag, but the M men will prevail."
That's
and
pretty
they're
good.
And the banner back, and here comes the Michigan Wolverines. And they all touched that banner. So 2 years later, in 1975, every Michigan football player was out there to hold that banner up and protect it against the Ohio State Buckeyes. So
they
Ohio
tried it
State
again.
Came down, and Woody Hayes was there, and he grabbed that banner, and he tried to take it down. And so the next day in the paper, there was a picture of a full-bearded guy with an M jacket on. He had his fist cocked back against Woody. And I went over into Bo's office and said, "Bo," I said, "look at this." He said, "Wait a minute. Who is that? Who's that bearded guy there getting ready to hit Woody? What the heck's going on?" And I said, "Oh, Bo, that's Dave Gallagher, you know, former captain of the football team." And Bo just looked at me and shook his head. But that's how they protect that banner now. And it's been in history for a long time, and it's just part of Michigan football.
Now, is Woody the only coach who's actually tried to take it down before?
Yeah, Ohio State was the only. They had the unmitigated gall, as they say, to do that. But no, it's never been touched. That. In fact, now. Well, I'll tell you a story on that. So, in 1977, Bo tells me, he says, "John, go over there to that Ohio State locker room and you tell Coach Woody Hayes that Bo Schembechler demands that he take the field first. He demands that Woody Hayes takes the field first." So I went over and I knocked on the locker room door. Woody Hayes opens the door. I said, "Coach Hayes, I just talked to Coach Schembechler over, and he's really asking that he'd really appreciate it, sir, if you take the field first." With that, Coach Hayes looked at me and he slammed the door. It almost caught my fingers in the hinge. I went back over and said, "Coach Schembechler, I don't think Coach Hayes wants to take the field first." He turned his index finger around and put it between my ribs, and he says, "Falk, go back over there and you tell Woody Hayes that Bo Schembechler is demanding and ordering Woody Hayes to take the field first." Now, do you understand me? I am ordering Woody Hayes to take the field first. So I go back over, and I knocked on the door again. There was Coach Hayes. I said, "Coach Hayes, I just talked to Coach, and he really would appreciate it. In fact, it really make him feel good if you take the fields first, sir." And he looked at me again. He slammed the door, and then 2 minutes later, he opened the door, and he stared at me, and he walked down in the field. Well, that was the last year that the visiting team took the field first. After that, they passed an NCAA rule saying that the home team must take the field first. So from that game on, after that, Michigan always takes the field first and taps the banner, and the banner's gone by the time the visiting team is down the tunnel.
That's probably for the best. how come you didn't tell him your demands? How come you didn't pass along exactly what Bo said?
What's that?
How come you couldn't tell? You didn't tell it, go up to Woody and say, "Hey, listen, Bo Schembechler demands."
I thought it was better for me to talk to him in a little kindness. I didn't have the power and the authority that Coach Schembechler had. I didn't really want to go over there and get hit by Coach Hayes.
I can imagine being afraid of Woody Hayes on a game day. That would seem
He was a wild guy on game day. In fact, he used to come up that tunnel, and as our football players were walking up the field, he was in there. He was swinging his fist at all of us and trying to knock us over and knock us down. And the guys come in and they said to me, "Big John, did you see Coach Hayes?" I said, "I saw him out there, man." I said, "He's fired up today, ain't he?" He said, "Yeah, and we're going to match that. We're going to be more fired up than he is." And that's just the type of guy that Coach Hayes was. He knew how to fire up his team when they saw him act like that. They knew they were going to come out fighting too, and that's the way Michigan and Ohio State have played for years.
So, is the 98? That's the only time we've lost a banner. Have there been other incidents?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's the only time. After that, then I think we've gone through one more banner since then. But I will say this: that since 1978, that banner has a special storage area in Chrysler Arena, and it gets locked up there until the day of the game.
Did you say that there's been an extra banner, so they get replaced?
No, I said I think they've gone through one more banner. I think they did another new banner. But
what happens to the old banners?
I don't know. You know, that's a good question. I have no idea what happened to it. I know that they made one more new one.
That's quite a piece of memorabilia right there.
It's quite a piece of memorabilia. I have no idea where it is. All I know is that every Saturday now, on Saturday morning, they come over there and they unlock that door and they take it out. They don't put it out anymore on Friday night.
Well, get your shovels out, Michigan fans. Anywhere you dig, there could be a vintage Michigan Go Blue banner.
Yeah, exactly.
If it says M Club supports you, that's the one.
M Club supports you. That's the big one. Yes, sir.
Don't dig in my yard.
Yep.
All right, John. Well, we certainly love your stories.
Well, you're welcome.
The book is 40 Years in the Big House, of course, by John Falk. If you don't have it, it's available anywhere books are sold. Underground Printing has many copies right in front of us.
Even in the back of my car, whenever we're on Fridays. And on Fridays when I'm over there sometime, somebody will come in to try to visit the football building on a Friday and say, "Oh, I wish I could buy your books." "Hold on 1 minute, sir. I'll be right back." And I go out to the car, and I bring the book back in, and I sign it for them, and they buy a book right there from me.
So if you know where bookstores or John Falk's car is, it's easy to get this
you
book.
You can get a book. In fact, next week I got to do a Chad Tuff thing over in Birmingham, and the guy who's sponsoring the Chat Tough thing bought 75 of the If These Walls Would Talk, the first book. He bought 75 of those books, and he's going to give them out to the donors at that charter thing next week. So that'll be neat.
If you're headed to that, you'll probably get one of those. And if you're not already, then that's an incentive to go. And, of course, Chat Tough.
That's exactly right. It sounds good to me. All right?
Yeah. Thank you, John Falk. Right. This is awesome.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you later.
All right. Go Blue.
Yes, sir.
A privilege to talk to John Falk, especially because he has stories of the most history-laden of all college football programs. And I will brook no discussion of this from pissant Notre Dame fans. None, I say.
You know, I have some experience in this. we do these books every year, and like the whole back part is like this, and we have these history sections. And so Michigan has the Bentley Library.
Yeah.
And the Ann Arbor District Library. And all of these have a tremendous amount of material, photos. You can read every single copy. You can search every single copy of the Michigan Daily going back to the 1800s. And it's all free. Whatever you need, they'll come. If you need to make a copy or get out some microfiche or something, there's a small charge. But like it's there and available for anyone who wants to go and find this stuff. And I think part of the reason that Michigan has such a attachment to its history is because we have guys like John Falk, and people want to hear those stories, but also we have other curators too who are keeping this history alive. Notre Dame, we did a couple articles with them this year where I needed to get some stuff from them, and they have like most universities, they lock that stuff up, and if you're another university, you can access it, or you can come and pay them a rather large amount for them to access the image and let you use it, and then you have to control it and make sure it doesn't end up on the internet. And I think that's fine. I think that those materials are very valuable, but I think being able to share your history, and Michigan does such a good job with it, and I think that's one of the reasons Michigan fans are so into their history.
All right, well, we're going to take one more break, come back, start surveying the future, and the future beholds... Beholds the Western Michigan Broncos of Western Michigan.
And so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9.
Colby, what about you?
7.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending. NMLS 1161358. Equal housing lender.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there.
When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Like five. So, Brian.
Yes.
Did you see anything that wasn't hideously depressing?
Well, first of all, we're at the Bow Store, which is not hideously depressing, and I'm seeing it right now with my very eyes, because this is MGO Radio 4.1.
That's right. And you know what else is not hideously depressing at all?
No.
Our sponsors. Oh.
I should have thought of that because I was just talking about one of our sponsors.
Right. But, whenever I have an incredibly bad segue, that's usually where I'm going. And where I'm going is Underground Printing, the Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homesure Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, Lantana Hummus, and the Ann Arbor District Library.
The Ann Arbor District Library.
Yeah, they got a new podcast out.
Oh,
I was telling you about the history.
So the you were asking if there was anything from the film review that actually like improved my mood.
Yeah, or at least confirmed something that was happy.
Well, I thought the wide receivers did a pretty good job. They there was one drop, and that was like Zach Gentry right at the end of the game when like a 5 yard out, which you kind of don't even want him to catch that much, but. Everything there was fairly routine because Michigan couldn't throw downfield, so there were only a couple of even slightly difficult catches. One, of course, was Nico Collins's. And seeing Nico Collins's route on that where he just runs by Julian Love, who's supposed to be a top-end corner, is like, if he can be 6'5 and do that, then you really have something. So, you know, further exploration of those guys. And I thought Patterson... You know, he threw a terrible interception, but his success rate was 77%, which is a really good success rate against a quality opponent. And, you know, that doesn't really take everything into account when we're talking about pressure. So some throws get filed as pressure, and those aren't counted when it's a bad throw. But there are a lot of situations where, you know, you fail to get to that number and you're not under that much pressure when you do complete passes. So... You know, I thought he was largely as advertised. He was very accurate. He hit his downfield shot when he was allowed to do it without being interfered with. And he looked pretty comfortable. I did think that there were a couple of incidents where he needed to get the ball out faster. But this is a quarterback who's in a new system in his first game. And he's got, you know... maybe a season's worth of experience overall, but he's not a super, super experienced quarterback. So I thought, given the context, that he did a really good job.
Yeah, there were moments there where I was kind of like, this guy is the best quarterback we've seen in a very long time. And other moments where I was like, well, this guy's in a new system. But, I mean, it's with him now, I kind of more feel like, can we keep him upright? Can we keep him healthy? Can we keep him protected enough to make plays? But we definitely don't have... We're not in the situation we were last year. Like, this is a quarterback that can win Michigan some games. And, I mean, we didn't get to see him vamp that much, but he did a couple cool things that were making things, making plays on his own. And
yeah, I mean, there were a couple plays late where he was able to escape the pocket and make something happen. And that...
Getting away from that blitz, the blindside blitz, was... I don't think I've ever seen someone do that. It looked like I swore it was going to be a strip sack. The camera was from we were on the other side of the line, so we didn't see anything that happened. And then magically, he appears with the ball, and he's running downfield.
Well, you know, it was a good play. The scramble, I don't think it was unprecedented in the history of football.
I've been watching some pretty bad quarterback play and seen a lot of guys just kind of curl up and go down when you take that hit and, like, hopefully hold on to the ball. I wouldn't say it was like, you know, oh, wow, start the Heisman campaign, but that was a moment where a Michigan quarterback was making a play, and I would not have expected any quarterback to do so. And that was incredibly refreshing just in that moment to feel like that again.
Yeah, I thought the linebacker play was good, and we expected part of that coming into the season, but we also had a couple of new players get extended debuts, and they actually had to play together for an extended period of time because Devin Bush went out with a cramp. And both those guys seemed plausible. Like, they didn't blow me away, but, you know, they both finished positive. And that's, you know, when I grade linebackers, anything that's around zero is okay. And then once you start getting to anything positive, you're looking at a pretty good player. And, you know, Ross and Gill seem to know where they should be all the time. I didn't see any obvious busts for them. You know, there were a couple of bad moments. You know, Gill came in way too hot when he got a free run at Wimbush's back, and that turned into a big play when it could have been a sack. Ross, I thought, was really slow to react on the quarterback draw that actually got a first down. So, they had some bumps, but I also thought, you know, for the first game, when one's a true sophomore, one's a redshirt sophomore,
same class as Bush.
Yeah, so those guys had promising debuts. So whereas the defensive tackles were pretty iffy, I thought that weak side linebacker spot looks like it's in good hands and looks like it should be in good hands for some time to come, which is not only important for this year but also for next year because, of course, Devin Bush is, well, let's say the NFL is interested.
we got a couple plays when Bush had his leg thing that would, you know, where we lived without Bush for a moment, and it didn't look like we were bad, but it was definitely he was definitely missed, especially when he came back and just made a literal rabbit scroll play right after that.
Let's
What did you think of Uche?
Ease off on the literal, though.
Okay. All right, fine. He jumped on a guy's back and rode him down. That is what squirrels do.
I can't go away. I
apologize for.
I'm sorry. I'm
adding
just
to the literal problem.
I am a grammar pedant in this way, and I will always be.
Anyway,
what
did you think of Uche?
He didn't really get much playing time with which to do anything. I thought
he had like a series. I think in
he got a little bit here and there. I thought he, you know, he reacted well on a wide receiver screen. He didn't really rush the quarterback very much or didn't have much impact on a limited number of rushes. So
yeah,
I
thought they were using him more as like a hybrid space player than a linebacker or than like the edge player that we thought he was going to be.
Well, he fits into that extra linebacker that Furbush does, and they'll probably use him in the same way. I think the jury is still out. Like, he got some playing time. He didn't do a ton with it. We'll see how that develops going down the road. But, you know, I would say that's an incomplete, and we'll see what it looks like over the next couple weeks. And then Brad Hawkins, he obviously had the very distressing play, but he didn't go in the tank after that. Michigan moved to a lot of too high stuff, and that made him the force player whenever Notre Dame would try to get the edge, which happened with some frequency. And he looked very comfortable coming up and putting people on the ground. He didn't miss any tackles. He came up quickly. Didn't get tested in pass protection. Pass coverage again. But, you know, I thought he, for a guy who could fall apart after having a real bad thing happen to him, I thought he recovered well. Actually got up to positive in my rankings after that.
I had to add that for you too because you left him out here.
Yeah, well,
I think the nicest thing you could say about Hawkins is, like, even at the end of that game, if I had to go back and put somebody else in that spot, I wouldn't have. You ask me, I'd still want Hawkins there. It's just it was just a bad moment.
I think the starter is probably a better bet to, like, not shove the ball directly into Notre Dame wide receiver's chest.
Yes.
Throw that one out.
Knowing what would happen, yes, but Hawkins is also a guy who you know, he was a guy, a jump ball specialist in high school. And I think it was just one of those fluky things that if it was happening in a game, in his 10th game playing, then, okay, that happened to him. But I thought the other thing about him that I thought was interesting is that he's known as a guy who's really good in man. That's what all the program chatter was always about. He's great in man coverage, or maybe their best safety in man coverage. And he played a lot of zone in this game, and he played well in a lot of zone. So if he's got that in his repertoire as well.
He didn't play zone that got tested in coverage. He played zone that got tested as a run defender. So there's still an open question about what that looks like when, you know, you're playing a team that throws it more than 22 times. And by the time that Calkins got in there, I think they were probably done with about half their passing attempts for the game. And a lot of the other stuff was just, you know, throwback screens and, you know, bombs down the sideline that don't really involve the safety. So I think the jury is very much out on how Hawkins does in coverage. But, you know, for what he was presented after the big bad thing, he did pretty well. I don't think there's really anything else.
There was one other guy I wanted to call out, is that McCune had a great day in blocking that I think I didn't see until your UFR.
Well, I'm a little bit leery of my own grades there, because it's just like they came out so well, and I'm just like, I don't know what exactly happened there so that the negatives are so low, but, you know, it's just, I grade the way I grade, and that's the way it came out. And last year, some good grades in the Michigan State and Penn State games for blocking did presage a big surge right after that. So hopefully, you know, Michigan can get some things straightened out. And the offensive line did look a lot more coherent. So they when things went poorly, it was because the guy was a step late, not because the guy was off doing something else. So I thought, you know, they looked like they had really started to polish up and get unified as an offensive line. And I think hopefully you can see over the next month or so that they can really polish up there and get somewhere near Warner would like them to be over the long haul. But that's enough about the Notre Dame game. We are going to take one more break here. We're going to come back, and we are going to talk Western Michigan Bronco football.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Do you like podcasts that aren't about sports? Maybe ones about music or movies or books or Ann Arbor history? Then, hoo boy, do we have news for you. the Ann Arbor District Library offers podcasts about all of these topics and more on aadl.org or for streaming on your favorite podcast app. Visit aadl.org/podcasts to check out shows like Undercovers with Martin Bandek, interviews with music and pop culture authors, or the Michigan Theaters podcast, Behind the Marquee. There's the comic book podcast Super Skull, produced by the crew at Vault of Midnight, and the Ann Arbor History podcast, Ann Arbor Stories. Or check out AADL's newest podcast, Presenting Alfred Hitchcock Presents, an episode-by-episode dive into Hitchcock's popular anthology TV series. If you like podcasts, AADL has you covered. Check out aadl.org/podcasts and find your next favorite podcast today.
I'm a weed, a bad seed, where nothing should ever grow. Forget about me when kiss.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 4.1 from the Bow Store live on Main Street. I want to tell you about my favorite hummus.
Oh, I love that hummus.
I didn't even tell you about it.
You're talking about the one that's not made of kittens, right?
Well, I wanted to be more specific than that.
Okay. Well, there's only one that I know that is absolutely never made out of kittens, and that's Lantana hummus.
Oh, well. I thought we'd move past that. I thought the audience has imbibed this knowledge and now knows that they want a kitten-free hummus experience at Lantana.
I think once in a while it's a good reminder. Yeah.
Lantana is the only company that guarantees no kittens will be in your hummus. One day we're going to actually get them to do that.
Yeah.
There's going to be a little page on the website that says kitten-free hummus.
We're going to have to get like a Michigan win over Ohio State or something like that. I should mention the owner of that is like a huge Michigan fan. Matt Gase is like a
which is clear. Because who else would put up with this? But I actually just opened up a container of their Hatch Chili Hummus. And one of the interesting things that they do is they have a blizzard of flavors that are always coming out. And every time I look at it, it's like, oh, that's different. That's new. And some of them are scary, and I don't like them, like the strawberry ones. I haven't tested it. It's probably delicious. But
I haven't tested it sober yet, but it was good. It was good drunk.
Just like, I don't know about this one, but maybe I'll try the Hatch Chili one. So, and it's good. And it tastes like
Hatch Chili.
I was going to say not kittens.
Not kittens. That was,
but also Hatch
Chili's.
That was
the second thing I was going to say.
Well, Lantana hummus is available at Bush's, Meyer, and your local grocer.
Look for the hummus with the stripe blitz.
And possibly John Falk's trunk. We don't know. I'm not saying that it's there, but I'm not saying that it's not either.
As a fellow author, I believe Halo Victors makes me an author as well. As a fellow author, I understand the book in the trunk thing, because I have not been without a book in my trunk since 2012.
Okay, does that mean that you have hummus in your trunk, though? I don't mean like...
Right now, yes, I do, because I forgot to bring it in.
You do?
I do. I literally have hummus in my trunk.
All right, so...
Literally, used correctly, by the way, I literally have hummus in my trunk.
So we have an extremely large sample size of one that suggests that you can buy Lantana hummus from John Falk. Please do not go up to John Falk and ask to buy Lantana hummus and then say that we told you to do this. You can do it. Just don't tell him that we said that you could.
Or at least do it kindly.
And please don't record this and put it on the internet. Anybody.
No one would do that.
Anyway, Western Michigan.
Yes.
The Broncos, they lost to Syracuse last week, 55-42.
Yeah.
And the 42 sounds a little scary, but then it's like, all right, they were down 34-7 at halftime, I believe was the...
It was down 2 minutes into the second quarter. Oh. They were down 34-7.
Really?
Yeah.
So this
and
was...
Syracuse
this was
inserts their backup quarterback at that point.
Highly garbage time experience.
Right. But that's a lesson to everybody. Do not insert your backup quarterback 2 minutes into the second quarter against Western Michigan because they might bomb their way back into relevancy.
Bomb their way back into relevancy is interesting because last year I think I remember watching – did they play Michigan State in
yes.
the first game?
Second game. In their second game, but yes.
And this is the first game after they graduated a very good quarterback
right.
whose name I forget.
Oh, it was in my head.
But was not Alex right. Carter. And they were playing this Wasink dude, and I was just furious at this guy because he was so bad, and he was the only thing separating Western Michigan from a win in that game against Michigan State. And now you're telling me that they're bombing it down the field against Syracuse?
Yeah, well, Wasink needed some time to not be a freshman anymore.
Sure.
And now that he is not, he's actually pretty all right. I think Western's problem last year was that Michigan State game. They got like five guys injured who were, and three of them were at least really important players. And then through the course of last year, I think the number was 20, give or take. Like, I don't know what freshman was actually injured versus redshirting, but the number that's out there is 20 guys were hurt last year. And that was supposed to be their like Wile E. Coyote drop off, maybe before the drop off year.
Right. But it was just the drop off year.
Right. And the problem with that is now they've kind of graduated a lot of those guys, especially on defense. So they have the same strategy. Last year they couldn't bomb it because Wasink was out, and the quarterback they had in there just didn't have the arm for it.
Wasink also did not have the arm for it last year. If the Michigan State game I saw was any indication.
He can get the ball downfield. He has to push
a
little bit.
He was so bad. I was very upset about him. I was like, why can't you be like just an average Mac quarterback, and then this is a dub for the Western Michigan football Broncos?
Yep. But
he wasn't.
But, Michigan State is going to get close. Listen to me about Michigan State.
Michigan State first week, blah, blah, blah.
It's always going to happen.
Always
and they're going to find a way to pull it out, and we're going to have 10 reasons why it was lucky. And yeah.
Look, I don't want we should focus on
Western the actual Michigan. Western Michigan.
So this is a Mac passing spread like they all are.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
Do they have any scary personnel on offense except for the guy in the mustache who's just kind of leering at me?
Oh, that guy's on defense.
Okay.
But they do have a couple little guys. So the one receiver Eskridge is
it's a good name.
They have some good names on this team, but this Dwayne Eskridge, they didn't do so well.
Is it Dwayne or is it Dwayne?
It's D apostrophe.
Okay, so
Dwayne.
It is Dwayne.
Dwayne, yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Dwayne Eskridge, he exploded against Syracuse for, I think, over 200 yards and two touchdowns.
Was this all like dink stuff that turned into yak, or is it?
No, it was bombing it down the field because Syracuse cornerbacks play 10 yards off and then jump up on you and just, you know.
Oh, so they were getting double moved?
Yep, sometimes they got double moved, and sometimes they just completely got run by.
All right.
So they like to run twins where, you know, he's the guy in the slot and then run a slot fade with him. And this is absolutely the game where you want Lavert Hill to match up on that guy and erase him. And then they've got an actual slot receiver who's several inches taller than the guy who should be playing slot. And I'm not even going to give you his real name because his nickname is Bird, and we're just going with that.
His nickname is Bird.
Yes. And it's very descriptive.
Is that with an I or a U?
No, it's just Bird, like the ornithological.
Okay.
Yes.
So not with a U.
No, just Bird.
Would be pretty good if his nickname was Bird with a U.
Where would you even put that U?
Where the I goes. It's just B-U-R-D.
Bird?
Yeah.
That sounds more like a linebacker. Bird. Anyway.
That'd be a good Brazilian linebacker name, where you just get the one name.
Purdue will get him eventually. But we're not on Purdue. We're on Mini Purdue.
Is this Mini Purdue?
They don't really run a lot. No, they're not. If they're mini anything, they're mini this year's Ohio State.
Just saying stuff that has no semantic context. That's our brand.
I mean, there's a little bit of Maryland to them too, because they got a scat back, Levante Bellamy, who they like to run out the outside with a. And put him in space.
I'm less concerned about that now in kind of the post-McCray era. I felt that the linebackers were rangier and able to, get out on stuff. Also, if Michigan's going to run more cover two, which they might have to this year, that kind of shuts off the outside stuff because the safety's in a much better position to go whack it.
Yeah, I'm not...
Phrasing, I'm sorry, people.
More concerned about interior running after seeing our tackles. Because that's where they did a lot of their
damage. Are we concerned about the interior running of a MAC team?
They have a really good center. He's the best player on their team.
Do they have a really good center or a really good
MAC
center?
No,
he's an NFL prospect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not an NFL prospect who could have gone. I mean, he might have
been an early entry, but he's he could go in the draft.
Yeah, he's probably fourth or fifth rounder. And they've been putting guys in the draft every year.
Sure.
I put this on Twitter, and then people took it seriously. Their media guide, or their game notes, said that Western Michigan has put eight guys in the NFL since in the NFL draft since 2006, matching or surpassing these Big Ten teams. And they listed like Iowa and Michigan State, who each have like over 20 guys in the NFL right now.
Well, yeah, but how
they were all drafted? Yes, there's. I mean, it
could
was
be right.
It was incredibly, incredibly wrong, and it's in the game.
I don't
notes.
Really remember a lot of Iowa guys going in the draft.
Yeah, they're off.
I mean, Michigan State had like a couple of cornerbacks, but then they have anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, it's not true, but they do put guys in. It's not true they put guys in the draft at the rate of a mid Big Ten team, but they do put guys in the draft, and this is the next one that's going. Their other guy who was like in line for preseason awards, which you know what lineman isn't. He's the right guard, but he's kind of light. He's not 300 pounds yet. And I had one clip where the defensive tackle from Syracuse just flung him into the quarterback. Like, he was set up to block. He was back there and just got hurled.
Disrespectful.
Just very disrespectfully. That's going to happen on their defense, too. That's kind of this team. They're small, and they are going to bomb it. They want to... You know, and they're going to come after you with the blitz on the other side.
Okay, Drake Harris revenge tour possibilities.
Oh my God, he's exactly how we remember him. Tell me a Drake Harris play, like a Drake Harris play that you remember from his career.
He had like a badass catch that got called back for offensive pass interference.
Okay, that didn't happen. Do you remember?
That did happen.
No, that didn't happen against Syracuse. Do you remember him like going down the sidelines and you think he's got to step on the cornerback and then the cornerback kind of catches up and the ball falls harmlessly like 4 yards in front of him?
Yeah, but that's not Drake Harris's fault.
Well, when Drake Harris had two steps on the cornerback, and then the cornerback is in a better position to catch that, he just does not have that long speed anymore. Happened a few times.
I don't remember that.
Do you remember like the let's throw a nice screen to Drake Harris so he gets a catch in this game?
No.
Play? Okay.
I just remember the OPI.
Yeah.
Because it was a good catch.
Yeah, so he doesn't really have the pogo sticks. He doesn't really have the speed.
So you project that we will not get dunked on by Drake Harris.
I think long as
despite the fact that this is Michigan and getting dunked on by Drake Harris would be very Michigan.
Here's another thing to remember. When was the moment that we first thought Brandon Watson was going to be really good? It was that spring game.
Okay, but
was,
Watson is pretty good now.
Yes, he is. But the first time we saw that was a spring game when he was just completely shutting down Drake Harris and all the other
tall receivers. I don't want to talk about this anymore. You're getting personal.
I'm not getting personal. I like Drake Harris. I got to use my
like we should stop talking about this because the more you downplay this, the more that Drake Harris dunks all over us.
And we're not the Lions. It's not going to happen.
It's going to be like Finky like times six.
Yeah, no, it's going that Bird is the guy who's going to do that.
Can we really say that we're not the Lions at this point?
We're not the Lions. You'd have to do this for like 60 more years to be the Lions.
That's a fair point. That is a fair point.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So their offense is just kind of a max centered spread. Will be interesting to see how they test the interior with a couple of good players. And then it's about kind of shutting down a lot of horizontal stuff.
Yeah. I think this is Michigan is a bad defense for them to face. That's the way they're designed and the way that, we have LeVert to shut down their best thing.
All right. Moving on to the other side of the ball.
Yes.
The Blitz. Defense here goes up to 11.
I got a bunch of clips, and I this isn't just me picking and cherry picking. This is where they line up. The safeties are at 5 yards or less.
What?
Yeah.
Nobody does that.
They do this.
I'm going to count the number of people in this photograph.
I counted.
There is a deep safety.
There is no deep safety. Look, there's no shadow over there or anything. This is a very visual podcast right now.
Yeah, it is a very visual podcast. There's only like 9 people on the screen, Seth.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
No.
11 guys in that
screen. All right, you talk about this defense, and I'm going to count this.
Go do your funny little counting. That was a play that they ran, too, where all those guys up on the line are blitzing, and they tried to just chuck it to the guy. That's what they're going to do. They're going to try to come at you so fast, you're not going to be able to get the ball out.
Okay, this is definitely a shot of an entire defense, 5 yards, 6 yards, or closer to the line of scrimmage. That is insane.
Yeah.
Nobody ever does that.
Western Michigan. So their plan is they're going to have those safeties there, so it's going to be hard to run. They're going to try to jam you up as soon as you get off the line.
Good God.
And they you know, the, if your ball doesn't get out, praising, if the, if the ball doesn't get out of
can
the backfield.
Can we leave the phrasing to me, please? If the ball doesn't get out of the quarterback's hands, there's going to be some damage.
There's going to be some damage, and right. It makes you not want to run into it. And the thing about this is you should run into it.
Should you?
Yes, because as soon as you because the linebacker's going to...
Their defensive line must be so bad if that's
the
what
defensive tackles are. The ends are all right, but they're small.
Okay.
So they loop everyone around all over the place.
So it's all stunts and stuff.
Yeah, and or that, or they shoot the defensive tackles straight up field, and we've seen that. Like
so did Syracuse just have like 6 80-yard plays?
No, Syracuse had like 20 15-yard plays.
That's weird.
Yeah. It was just... they were running options on them, and then fake option pitches... Every single time, just completely got linebackers running the wrong direction. The linebackers are, I hate bagging on players, but like the linebackers are not max standard.
They're not max. What does max standard linebacking look like?
Better than this.
Okay.
All right. So
fair enough.
Yeah. The one guy who was actually a decent linebacker or could have been is kind of a hybrid space player. Yeah, number 20. He got kicked out of the game because there was a scuffle in the middle of it.
Wait, you got kicked out of the game because there was a scuffle?
Yeah, so Syracuse...
You don't get kicked out for a scuffle.
Well, Syracuse, this guy like did nothing.
I think this is a brouhaha.
He did nothing. He was the guy pulling people off.
No, this is important. I want to say a scuffle doesn't get kicked out of the game. A brouhaha does.
It was only a scuffle, bro.
It was not a scuffle if he got kicked out.
Yeah, I mean, we're in the MAC right now. Weird things happen. I think that they wanted to get control of everybody because the play before this...
A foo-for-all you could get kicked out
I'll tell you the story in case anyone missed it. The play before this, Syracuse's quarterback is running out of bounds, spots a guy on the Western Michigan sideline that he just wants to hit for some reason, and goes and does so. He just runs up. He's running out of bounds, then runs up and just whacks the guy. The guy responds with like a very loud facial expression, and there's some...
A very loud facial expression?
It's a very visual podcast, but I could make one for you if you can't imagine what I'm talking about.
You said loud, which implies that it is not.
Is it loud?
How do you make a loud facial expression?
I'm not doing that.
What do you mean you're not doing it?
Because, no, I'm not making that facial expression.
I'm not asking
just for you
to do
to
it.
See
I'm
it.
Asking you to explain yourself.
Eyes bugged wide open.
Okay.
Mouth, you know, what a...
He had a fight or flight response.
He had a I'm going to kill you right now response.
Do you see that a lot?
I've seen it in the past, yes.
Not from me, I hope.
No, I had an interesting middle school career. Subject
a lot
for
of knives. Yeah,
I fortunately got to sit out most of the gimmicky top fives that you and Ace have done. So my personal
about
life,
childhoods.
Yes,
I see.
So my personal life has stayed mostly a mystery to the public.
Well, now we know that you went to middle school in Malaysia.
No, Birmingham, Michigan.
You were threatened in Birmingham, Michigan in middle school?
We got in some scuffles, I'll tell you.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, we're getting it off.
This is like people who live in Ann Arbor complaining about traffic. They have no idea what traffic it is. You have no idea what a scuffle is. This is why you think it was a scuffle that got a gentleman kicked out of a football game.
I would call getting sent home without my shirt because it was ripped in the process. That would count.
So they confiscated your shirt?
No, my shirt was just torn up in the process of the fight. And so I had to
still,
go.
Still, like, my shirt got torn up.
And then
it's not
I had
exactly,
to get on the bus home with a
I
note
feel like
to my
we're
parents.
Digressing a little bit. So, like, you just came home without a shirt.
Yeah, and a note explaining where my shirt was and why I was in trouble for this.
What did it feel like driving home on a bus without a shirt on? It's, like, tacky.
Nobody wanted to talk to me on that bus ride home.
Did you, like...
I'm seething. I'm wearing no shirt.
Yeah.
I'm bleeding in a couple little places. Like, I'm a little scratched up.
Yeah.
And everyone has just seen me in a fight.
Yeah.
You don't talk to that guy for that bus ride. Yeah. You just leave that kid alone.
Did you, like, learn any cool moves after that? Like, jiu-jitsu or anything?
No. I was terrible at fighting, and I should not have done it.
I think that was implied.
It's a good thing I didn't go into that. Anyway, yeah. It's a good thing that...
I don't think really anybody on the MGO blog staff is any good at fighting.
No,
who would be the best? I had nobody.
I might be the best.
No.
We just heard
about your fighting
before.
Career. I don't know. It's not me. It's not Ace. It might be Dave. Dave's got like...
David is athletic.
He's the only guy who could go for more than a round without being like...
That's right. He bounces around you until like the rest of us are just wheezing.
Anyway, we have digressed slightly from the topic of the Western Michigan football Broncos.
So that's what started the fight, and that guy number 20 kicked out, and things got really ugly when he was gone because he's the only linebacker who kind of stays in his lane.
Yeah.
And the other ones will just kind of chase anything that they see as shiny.
So what are we looking for this game? Let's assume... for the purposes of this conversation, but not overall,
right?
That Michigan wins this game somewhat comfortably.
Yes.
Or better. What are the things that we want to see happen against this particular opponent to give us more confidence going forward?
Get your fullback out and run some power.
All right. That's a good one.
I think that it's the...
Even with like a safeties at 5 yards?
Minnesota tried doing something like that, and that's what we did to them.
What is it with row the boat, man?
Yeah, it's that... There is still so much P.J. Fleck in this program 2 years after he's gone.
Crazy.
Well, now they had to, they're not allowed to use row the boat because
right,
like copyrighted. Yeah. Right.
They have to be like,
so
fondle the ocelot. No, wait, that's not
right. So now
not a good slogan.
So now it's hashtag let's ride, which is more, you know,
it fits more with their thing.
Equine appropriate, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, still having
Please don't
the slogan.
Cut my head off and put me in a gangster's bed. That'd be a good slogan.
That is a good slogan.
For
we should make that
horses.
A t-shirt. We need some MGO t-shirts.
About horses that have been decapitated?
Anyway, the two guys that they have on defense are the two ends, and one of them was recruited by Don Brown.
Oh, that's actually fairly impressive.
Yeah, he's only 240 pounds, and he plays strong side, so... But... Yeah, he knows what he's doing, and the other guy is the same person who made the loud response face. I'm talking about Ali Fayed.
You're really just doubling down on this.
I believe in the metaphor, and I think
it's
people are going to know what I'm talking about.
You do you.
Yep. They also have a Rutgers transfer that they use off the edge a lot. Najee Clayton.
All right. Well, that pretty much sums up this defense then. They have a Rutgers transfer.
Yeah, they're going to come. I think we just need to bash them off the ball and run our thing. They're all, oh God, they suck up so fast on play action too.
Well, they have to. Like, there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah, so this is a game where I think Patterson gets 15 or 18 passes, completes 15 of them for 200 yards, and then you can put them on the shelf.
All right. All right, well, that's the Western Michigan Football Broncos. Thank you for listening to MGO Radio 4.1. Do you have any final closing thoughts about scuffles, brouhahas, tete-a-tetes?
Tete-a-tete?
I don't know how to pronounce that.
Tete-a-tete, yeah. Did it come from the French, or did we get that from Latin? I think
it's definitely French.
It's, yeah.
I think that you don't get kicked out for a tete-a-tete either. You get kicked out for brouhahas, fights... Kerfuffles? No, kerfuffles is not. You don't get kicked out.
No,
for
no, no.
Anyway, this is the end of our podcast.
Yeah. we have this system where we have to talk through the end
See
of the
See you next week, people!
Thank you for listening to MGO Radio 4.1. Thank our sponsors again, Underground Printing, the Bose Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshore Lending, University of Michigan Alumni Association, Residency in Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, Lantana Humboldt, Ann Arbor District Library. Let's go get in the kerfuffle.